nice one.
Do you really think that you're the nice one?
I feel like I have a better chance.
All right, we are live here with the Clydesdale Chronicle. We're live in the wash rack at Wisconsin State Fair in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Today is going to be our first episode. We're going to talk about a little bit about us, which I'm very uncomfortable with. But I think Christy's going to be really comfortable with that.
My motto is it's all about me, so let's get going.
With that, I was going to introduce Christy Stahlheim. She and I are going to work on this little passion project together. We'll just get right into it and get started.
So I think before you understand us, I think you need to understand the project. So again, welcome to the Clydesdale Chronicle, where we are focused on preserving the stories of yesterday, addressing the issues of today, and generating ideas for the future. So this is a little pet project of ours. Coming from a family with really rich history, I think it's important that we understand where we were, where we are, and where we're going.
Couldn't have said it better. So starting off, we're going to talk a little bit about Christy, since she's going to be comfortable with that. So Christy, what's your background? How did you get into this? What got you into it, and what's keeping you into it?
Well, I think what got me into it, I was born into it. I am fourth generation Clydesdale breeder. So my father and grandfather and his great-grandfather started this back in 1905. So there really wasn't a choice growing up. We showed horses. The whole family went, and we all had to participate. We all had to pitch in. And of the three kids, two of us still love it and are doing it still today with our families. And I think that's probably one of the best memories, is knowing that my kids get to experience some of the things that I experienced. I made some of my best, closest friends, not geographically close, but people that you can sit down and you can pick right up with, right where you left off. That's kind of where you come in, Kale, somebody that I met through horses. And for some reason, I can't get rid of you.
I was just going to look for the wah, wah, wah. So speaking of your family, are all of your kids into it?
No. I have three kids. So my dad had three kids. Two of us are into it. I have three kids. Only one kid is into it. And she is very much into it. And I always call her Grandpa's prodigy, because she is the one and only grandchild that he is probably going to get to raise up in the draft horse industry, just due to his age and the age of all of his grandkids. So like, she's the one. He had her started driving at 5 and kept pushing her and couldn't wait to get in the show ring. I'll be honest, she was probably in there before she could have been. I think she started driving at 8, and I think most fairs now have minimums of 10. She might be the reason for some of the minimum ages, but Grandpa was excited to get her in there. And it's fun to see everybody's passion for just the horses, for each other, especially with the kids. People really get excited about getting the kids in the arena. And I think, you know, we're live at the Wisconsin State Fair. We had huge showmanship classes again. We had a huge decorating turnout, which has always been kind of the loser in the all-around category. But it was nice to see all those kids get out there and try. And it was even better to see all the adults who came out and supported those kids, walked down the aisles, hung out. It wasn't, you just set up the kids and let them decorate and you walked away. Nobody walked away. So it was like an hour of just fun this morning.
That's awesome. Speaking of, it's your middle child.
Yes.
And your daughter, Addie. And she's also the Wisconsin Draft Horse Association queen.
Yes.
Here at the fair. So she's on double duty. I guess I'm going to just kind of go right into what we're going to ask probably a lot of our guests, because we're going to try to get a background and why they stick into it and what keeps them going into it. But throughout your whole memory as a child up till now, is there one horse that sticks out in your memory, whether it's a breeding horse, a show horse, or just a horse that was at the farm that just made a huge impact on you?
I'd have to say it was a gelding named Trey. He was in our hitch from probably like 2003 till that group lasted till about 2008, 2009.
You had him at the World Show.
He actually passed away right after the World Show. But he was a horse where Dad and I went out to a friend of ours we've had a lot of friends in the draft horse industry die tragically, but he passed away. We went out to the farm and we're going to pick out colts. And I had saved up some money, and I really wanted this roan colt. Like, he was spunky. I wanted him. Dad really tried to convince me on this bay colt, and I ended up taking them both. And I said, I think the roan's going to be the better one, Dad. And he's like, nope, you're wrong. It's not going to be the better one. Well, the bay horse was a dud, and the roan horse was stellar, because that is the horse that got me to the world championship ladies team in the 2007 world show.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember that horse. He just had a presence and a front end him, and just cocky and
just
a horse that loved his job and wanted to show.
He had
everybody.
A lot of drive.
Yeah, that's awesome. What's your favorite show?
My favorite show, probably right. It's always been the Wisconsin State Fair, to be really honest. But I have to say, I was kind of edging in on a close second. I think one of the reasons why Iowa, not just because it's the national, I think just the show schedule. Like, one of the things that I think has changed since we were kids, the show schedule seems to get tighter and tighter. I don't think we have as much time to...
No, there's no time to socialize.
No, none at all.
Yeah.
And so I feel like this show in particular, where we're at, I think they're really into the get them in here, get them out.
Well, it's just, aside from, like, today we have all day until 7 o'clock tonight. And then tomorrow, I guess it starts at 5. But tomorrow, everyone's going to get antsy about loading up and getting home. Okay. I do like Iowa. Iowa, to me, every time you go to Iowa, it's like a purely agricultural fair. Like, everyone's there. They're knowledgeable about agriculture, and they want to be there to watch the ag exhibits. So I've always appreciated that fair. Most of the state fairs you go to are always in a kind of a crap part of town.
Yeah.
But that one just feels like it's kind of a small town feel in a state fairgrounds. I've always felt that way until you go to bring your truck and trailer out or in. Then it's
And they don't. Those gate people in Iowa, they know, they do their job to a T.
I'm pretty sure Chip Lawrence and I almost got arrested. I think it was 3 years ago when we were going into the gate. So. Yeah, I love the fair. Yeah, the gate guy, Doug, shout out Doug, not a big fan of you. what are your future plans with Clydesdales? How do you see your future going with it? Obviously, Addie's into it. Is this something you want to keep, like, you think she's going to continue? You want to keep continuing? Is there an end goal? What's your future with them?
Well, I think the end goal is getting her through her youth stuff. And I think the big thing with even the kids and the youth program, and what I've seen, is it builds confidence. It shows, like, every show is a different show. You kind of, in not a lot of things do you get a do-over. But when you go from one show to another, you kind of get a do-over. You get to go out, you get to retry, hopefully learn something from the last one, apply it to the next one. You get, I mean, for us, it's like 6 weeks of learning, and then you're back on it. But I think the one thing I enjoy the most is actually the driving time we have prepping for the shows.
Because they have those real talks.
Oh, I mean, there is nothing better than the fact that it's her and I with a team of horses, and you're gone for a half an hour, and you have nothing to do but answer mom's questions.
Yeah.
And according to my son, that sounds awful.
All right, and the last question I have for you is, what do you look forward to with this podcast? What do you think? What do you want to see out of it? What do you want to do out of it? What's your goal with it? Because this is going to be both of our project. We're not doing this for financial reasons. This is purely, I think, a passion project that we just want to get these untold stories recorded. But what do you think?
For me, it is a passion project, because growing up with a family, especially my dad is such a storyteller. So I grew up with lots of stories, and there's a lot of history that comes through storytelling. The hard part is, we're losing a lot of our older generation, and I think there's a generation, and I'm going to blame my generation, I don't think we paid enough attention to some of those stories. I think we were so busy trying to improve things that we didn't take time to really listen to the lessons they were trying to tell us in those stories. And the reality is, not much has changed. A horseman is a horseman.
Mm-hmm.
There's different things that are happening in this industry, and I think if we stripped away some of the cosmetic pieces, I think if we strip back some of the enhancements, I'm a little concerned that we're losing the horsemanship. And so I want to bring back some of those stories when they talk about the tough times, because I think where
walking a horse the whole night because it was colicking, and we weren't going to give Banamine.
Oh, and my dad tells a story about horse being lame, and this is at Minnesota, and Minnesota's right next to the U of M. She was lame, and they walked her over to the U of M, x-rayed her, realized that she didn't need heels, and they didn't have anything to take them off. So him and the vet took turns with a hacksaw and cut those heels off to get the angle
of a heel cock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To get the angle of that shoe right. And she came back to the fairgrounds sound, and everyone thought she was extremely medicated. And he's like, nobody would believe me that we sat up most of the night and trying to
hacksaw the heel cocks off.
But those are the stories we don't hear about.
No.
And I don't know that anybody would. I'm a little concerned people wouldn't go through that effort for their horses these days.
No, and I think even if they'd go through the effort, they wouldn't want to tell somebody a bit about it because it's almost like a shameful thing. But
yeah.
That's how everyone learns. You learn by your mistakes. You learn by your friend's mistakes. Like, I'll call a friend. If I got something going on with a horse, I'll call him and say, hey, have you ever seen anything like this? Because they might know that, yep, I went through the same thing. This worked. And your vet might not even have that experience. So I love that. We can further educate and bring back some of the historics and the archive that actually worked.
Well, I think if we bring out some of these stories, I think as an industry, we are not really good with newcomers either.
No.
You know, when you think about we're not telling stories, we're not telling each other, and I think that's one of the reasons why some of these articles and podcasts are becoming popular is because for some reason we're not having those face-to-face conversations with newcomers. You need to get good fast.
Well, and it's gotten too competitive. We've all lost sight of why we all got into this, because it feels like a big extended family and we like to cut up and have a good time, but we still want to kick your ass, but I'll still be there to help you. And we've lost a little bit of that, I'll be there to help you. And
yes,
we need to bring that back, because that's why all of us got stuck on this and hooked on this and addicted to this. It's like a frickin' drug. But we just need to get back to the reason why we started taking the drug.
Yes.
So, cool. Well, with that, I'll hand it over to you, and then I'll get uncomfortable and probably start sweating.
Kale, you're already sweating. Yeah. Like, it's not going to start. So, it's your turn to give us a little bit of background of where you grew up, what got you started.
I grew up most of my life up until third grade, I grew up in town. I was a town kid. We had Arabians, and we boarded some Arabians. And then in fourth grade, my parents moved us back to their hometown in New Holstein. Both of them grew up in New Holstein. My grandpa was actually a teacher at the high school. And so we moved back there, and they bought some property from my mom's dad on the family farm. He wasn't selling the farm yet, but they bought a piece of the property. And then as soon as they bought that, a couple of years later, my grandfather actually was going to sell the whole farm, and that's a thing my dad kicks himself for every day, because I think it was like 400 acres, and it sold for like, I don't know, $200,000. It just sold about 5 years ago for $1.2 million.
He missed out on a big deal.
Yeah, so that's a sore subject for him. But we built a barn there, and then we slowly transitioned into Clydesdales, started selling some light horses, and then continued into the Clydesdales. We went out and looked at horses for all over. We did the famous Larson's tour.
Legitimately, you took the tour?
Oh, yeah.
Like, bought the ticket?
We bought the popcorn with Judy in the sequence.
Okay.
We were there. Yeah.
Okay.
Saw the whole show, private tour. And there were others there, but we got the in barn tour. But, so we went around. They always said that they wanted a bay, wanted a typical Budweiser Clydesdale. We ended up going down to Shannon Cobb's place. He and his dad had they were then in Huntington. And we fell in love with a roan mare. She was probably about 16'2". Just a chunky, stylish, but yet a stout little roan mare. Stood a little under herself in the front end, but just had like this massive chest on her and this head that just poked out of her back. And so we bought her. And we brought her home. We kind of just fell in love with it, sold the Arabs, and just kept breeding more Clydes. So the first show they ever went to, we were just talking about this the other night in the barn here, but the first show we came to, I think, was in 97 or 98. And we had never shown our own Arabians, really. Like, we always had a trainer or something do that. So my dad's not a horseman. So my mom was into it. So She showed the horse my dad whipped, but my mom actually showed the horse under Dean Woodbury at the National Clydesdale Show the first year in shorts.
Yes, and that is 1998 because I was the National Clydesdale Queen when that happened.
That's right. They stood, I think it was third. I think a second or third we stood in the class. But that was the first experience. And then since then, my brother and I used to annoy the crap out of your family. I'm sure Kellen did more than I did annoy you. But we just kind of got hooked on it. And like your family, my brother is not into it. He and his wife both are chiropractors. And I unfortunately have the... It's the drug.
So, yep.
Yeah, I'm stuck with it. So.
It's one of those things that either you have to have it or you can walk away from it. And unfortunately, some of us can't walk away from it.
Yeah.
It fills a void.
I don't know. My pocketbook would be way better off without them. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about that the other day. I'm like, when Addie turns 18, it'll be like 10 years of like really investing in this. And like, ooh, I don't even want to talk about the money we've invested.
I dread tax time.
But I'm curious, what was your favorite horse?
My favorite horse would be, it's actually the last filly we got off the first mare. So Maplewood Chelsea was the name of the first mare we bred, or first mare we bought from Shannon and Daryl. And so she'd have been raised by Dick Wagner out of Michigan. She was off of Solomon's Commodore and Woodland Amy Ann. So her last foal would have been a blue roan filly. She's born bay. We body clipped her for this show. And as soon as I took the clippers to her, it was blue roan underneath. So we brought her here. That mare had raised several good foals. One was actually the Briar horse this year. His name was Ned. And I named that one after Ned Nemec out in Massachusetts. Big, gangly, awkward colt. But she's produced the best horses we ever had that, to me, were competitive, drivable, front end, carried on. My parents wanted to get rid of that mare in the worst way as a yearling, and I said, no, we're going to keep her, and she ended up being the best broodmare we had. So I'd have to stick with her.
Isn't it funny? We both have memories that incorporate defiance with our parents, like, no, we're gonna do this, and no, we're gonna, like, it's just that instinctual. You find something that you really like and you're like, I am willing to fight for you.
But did your dad ever say, wow, you were right, Christy?
No. I'm pretty sure he said he was less wrong.
That sounds about right.
I don't think he ever said anything like that. What's your favorite show? You've probably been to a lot more than I have.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I haven't shown my own at a lot, but I've gone to help a lot of other people at shows. To me, there's something about... I like Iowa, but to me, there's something about the Royal Winter Fair, the history there. The stalls are ancient, but the way they clasp and the pomp and precedence they do there, it's just the pomp and circumstance, I should say. But it's just really... It's so cool, and they make it a big deal, and... Even if there's hardly in a class, people brag about winning the Royal.
Yeah.
Like, there can be two in a halter class, and they're bragging that they won. But there's just something to it, that place. It's terrible moving in and out. There's two doors. It is a shit show. But there's something about that. The grounds are like Holy Grail.
It is. Well, and we talk a little bit about tradition. Traditionally, that has always been one of the top shows. You know, before world shows came around, the Royal was always the top show.
It was like the biggest bragging rights to win the Royal.
Yep.
And I think that's purely because they make a big deal of it.
Yes.
But it's cool.
So, what are your future plans with Clydesdales?
I'll probably never get rid of it. I had kind of a rough year this year. Lost actually the last filly out of my favorite horse. And I just kind of lost my steam. I'll probably always have horses, but I joked this year that maybe I should just sell them all and buy a pontoon boat, keep the fans up, tear the stalls out, and buy a fake palm tree and let the wind blow through there and just get the radio going. And I could never take the boat to water and just sit on the boat and drink beer and be saving money every day. But I'll probably always be in it. I do love it. I don't know what I would do. I'd probably drive myself crazy. I'm not a sitter. I'm not a person that can stand around. I'm not a comfortable individual. I'm neurotic as shit. So I'll probably always have them. Otherwise, I'll just worry the piss about my dog or something else. And
Well, I feel like it's funny that you're like, I'm not going to have this, but I'm going to sit on a boat. And I'm like, you can't sit still.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds nice.
No, the boat is going to be out there, and you're going to be, like, swimming around it. Like,
well, not if it's parked on concrete.
You're going to be fake swimming around it.
Yeah. Rollerblading around the
boat. I'm a little worried about your mental health if that's the way you're going to go.
Yeah.
So what do you look forward to with this podcast?
I want to get the stories. I want to get the fun. I want to get the dirt. I want to talk about some controversial stuff. I want to talk about things that are happening within the association. Get the membership's voice actually raw. Mm-hmm. We're not going to edit this. It's going to be uncut. It's going to be what we are. If we swear, I'll try to run the beeper to try to cover it up, but I just want it to be real conversation. I want to get some things that are a little bit controversial and get members' opinions on certain things that maybe the association's direction is going on, or maybe what the style of horse, how has that changed? What do we see? What do we need to bring back? Do we need to try to breed for something within the Clydesdale horse to be more acceptable in the sale ring, or do we just need to keep holding back what we should, or in the breeding barn? Like, I want to get membership's voice. I want to talk to the old timers. I want to talk to the new timers. I want to be able to, so when you see somebody, if you're new and you see maybe a David Stahlheim, you can say, oh, I've heard about him, and this is what he's doing, and this is what he's breeding for, and this is what he looks for at a sale. Mm-hmm. And I want the other old timer that met Dave Stahlheim 20 years ago to hear this podcast and cut up about a rough story they had together.
Yeah.
Like, I want it all. I think it needs to be somewhat educational, but I want it more of storytelling. And I'm an antagonistic kind of person. I like to poke the bear. I like to kind of throw a little bit of jab. So I'm hoping that's okay with everybody. But I think for a lot of the people, what we're going to do is try to get them a cocktail, loosen up, and let's tell some real stories about the Clydesdale horse and the people in it.
Yeah. So my next question is, what's your favorite memory with a horse? Good, bad?
Probably the biggest one for me, when I started showing, I was really good at getting the thanks for coming award, or you participated. In showmanship, I got that all the time. But the first time I ever showed a horse, my brother got to show a 10-year-old mare, and I got to show a weanling filly that we stripped off the mare and brought down here. So we are in showmanship, and he's right next to me, and his is standing great, and I got a filly that just left her mom 2 days ago, so she rears up, breaks my nose, hits me in the gut and the nuts, and then lands on my foot, and I got the green ribbon.
I got the
So, yeah, it's...
I thought your favorite memory would have been a little bit happier, but I guess we're going to a dark place.
No, that was the one that probably sticks the biggest memory, but I've had a lot of injuries since then, so that was probably pretty minor.
I didn't know we were talking about injuries today.
Oh, that's just the biggest memory. I didn't have to say, you never said good memory.
Most people assume good.
I'm not most people. Well, with that, I just wanted to get you guys kind of an introduction of who we are, what we kind of want to talk about, and maybe a little bit of our dark, weird humor.
Yeah. Well, I also wanted to poke the bear because I also wanted to ask, what do you think is one of the biggest issues we've got right now in the draft horse industry?
In the draft horse industry or the Clydes?
Let's go Clydes first.
I think in the Clydes, if it pertains to the horse, I think we're in decent shape with the youth out there and the a lot of youth that seem to be really involved. Like, they're not just... When we were showing when we were younger, we'd have the kids that their parents got the horse ready for them, and then they just grabbed the lead line and went. These kids that are here and the fairs that I've been traveling to, the kids actually do work along with the crew or with the family. And so I think on that front, the future of the breed, I think, is okay. I think we need to go back to a little bit less of maybe what's winning in the show ring, and maybe go back to a little bit more of what's correct conformation and correct shoeing. Just correct conformation in general. I see a lot of things, and I love to cover up. I've always said halter horses, or showing halter horses, is an art. It's just about hiding their flaws and accentuating their good points. But I think that some of that's easily looked. If you're a good judge, you can look over.
Yes.
Some flared out feet, or you can see that's all flare. There's no actual heel that's behind that flare. And so I think it just needs to come back to the basics. Let's drop the politics. Let's drop the BS. Let's forget about who's showing you next, or who's judging you next week, and let's just call a spade in the ring. As far as the association goes, I think the board of directors, I think they need to listen to their membership. I think they need to have more membership voting. I think there's a little bit of a power dynamic where a lot of the people on the board feel like they're puffed up and I'm on the Clyde board. They're not listening to the membership and they're voting how they feel or how their friend tells them to vote. And I think they should be putting a lot of those issues back to the membership where they're paying their dues and saying, hey, guys, what do you think we should do with this? And take their voice and then make that decision. But I don't think there's a lot of communication from the board of directors to the membership.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I don't know that there's a feedback mechanism for a membership to get feedback up to the board. Like there's no actual communication type style that we have to follow.
I'll talk to a lot of the board members and they're saying, oh, I'm so sick of it. Then now we voted for, say, the World Show in Illinois and now the members don't want it there. Well, if you want to do what the members want, have the members vote on it and then push it through. Then there's going to be a lot less bitching and a lot more happy people. It's not that hard.
Well, and if you asked and the membership said, guess what? It's probably a lot easier to get some volunteers in something that you had a say in.
And money.
It's all about money.
It's just simple. Listen to the people that are registering their horses, showing their horses, transferring their horses. If you listen to the majority of those people, you will have a happy, healthy association of
people. And I'm going to piggyback on what you said about the youth. You're looking at it from a different lens than I am. I'm super excited because of the numbers of the youth out here. I am concerned because I think this, if you are not raised in a family where you have some of this stuff, if you had to start from scratch, or if some of these kids...
You can't afford
it. They can't afford it. And I'm concerned that they're going to end up with a love of horses and a love of doing this and a pocketbook that's not going to allow them to do this.
No, but everything's costing more. It's not just the horse itself. It's the hay, the grain, land. I mean, it's insane. So, like, I'll be honest, we had a family function at my parents' place the other weekend, and my cousin's like, she's telling her uncle, I want to buy a horse. I said, Nick, I'm addicted to this crap. They're going to be here. Just bring her over.
Yeah.
Like, there's no reason to go spend money. And they're cow people, so, like, that's the last thing he wants is a 2,000-pound horse in his backyard. So I said, just bring her over. They're going to be here. But more people need to open themselves up.
Yeah. And that is something that I've seen, and I've seen it pushed. Actually, one of the things I'm more impressed with the bigger hitches than when we were kids, there's a lot more larger hitches that have youth participants. Like, when we were kids, any of the bigger corporate hitches, they never were hardly ever in a youth class.
No.
You know, it was always the families that put the youth out there. And I do have to commend a lot of our more corporate hitches for getting some youth out there that aren't even their youth. They're not connected with the family, the trainer.
No.
They are...
Well, it's not like Tim's corporate, Tim Myers, South Creek, but he's always got... If there's somebody there that needs to drive a team to be able to compete for the overall, he'll hook a team up. Like, we need more people that are just willing to give that kid that maybe can't afford it, or his parents can't afford it, or they don't have the property for it, that give them the opportunity.
Yep.
If they're into it, they're eventually going to find a career that can afford them to be into it in the future.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. And at some later point, we can talk about the Education Foundation and the supporting, but I think one of the things we have to do is figure out not only to help the youth understand how to show the horse and be very competent horsemen and women, but how do we help them with those career goals to be able to have that lifestyle with that horse, like a healthy lifestyle for the horse and for them?
Yeah. But you can always find somebody around there that has draft horses and board there's other opportunities that you can take. I know there's not a lot of lease programs for youth horses, but that would be
an interesting conversation.
Way to do it. And I've always told people, like, the friends of mine that have a hitch, and I said, well, why don't you guys just get into it? They have a older group of horses that are broke really well. I said, you guys should take it on and do a schooling. You should just take on three people for the summer. They learn how to drive a cart. They learn how to harness. They learn how to drive a team, a four, a six. They've got the group of horses to do that. I said, when I was a kid, I would have begged my parents to write a check for a mint to do that, to give that opportunity. And there's probably a way to actually be profitable with Clydesdale horses. But
we haven't figured it out.
I'll probably never do that, I think that the bigger picture needs to be talked about. Like, there's money to be made there. Look what parents pay to send their kids to school. They don't even, usually they don't even want to go to school.
No.
I mean, a Catholic education costs, it, just for, you know, pre-K to eighth grade costs the mint. Like, they would, if their kid really wanted something, a lot of these parents would cut the frickin' check to do it.
They'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Oh, now we have a whole nother conversation about future possibilities of employment.
Yeah. It's too bad I don't love kids.
I think he does. He just doesn't want to spend that much time with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Well, cool. This has been great getting to know, I guess I've already known you, but letting our audience get to know both of us a little bit better. We'll be down and catch you. We're going to try to get a couple more recorded here with some other breeders, long-term show people. I don't think there's a lot of new people here, but...
Nope, there's not a lot of new people here.
But we're going to hopefully... I'm going to try to get down to Iowa, and we're going to try to do some more of this down there. And hopefully, I think there's going to be a couple new people down there that we can get some words from. So
yeah, we want everyone to kind of get to know your membership, the new and the old.
Yeah, and what you like, what you dislike, what you can't stand, what you want to change. Like, I want to open up. Cool. We're going to sign off. Thanks.
Bye.